Returning from the sea cliffs where she had seen Doral launch himself for Laos, Maris felt full of hope. There was sadness, too, beneath it. The old familiar longing had swept over her again as she helped Doral unfold his wings and watched him mount the warm blue sky. But the pain was a little less this time. Although she would have given anything to fly with Doral again, she had other things to think about now, and it was not so difficult to pull her hopeless thoughts away from the sky and think of more practical matters. Doral had promised to return soon with more followers, and Maris enjoyed the vision of an even vaster circle of black flyers. She was shocked out of her reverie as she approached Evan's house by the sound of a shriek from within. She ran the last few steps and threw the door open. She saw at once that Barry was crying, Evan trying in vain to comfort her. Standing a little apart was Srella with a boy from Thossi.
"What's wrong?" Maris cried, suspecting the worst.
At her voice, Barry turned and ran to her aunt, weeping.
"My father! They took my father! Make them! Please make them!"
Maris embraced the weeping child and stroked her hair absently.
"What's happened to Col?"
"Col has been arrested and taken to the keep," Evan said. "The landsman has seized a half-dozen other singers as well. Everyone known to have performed Col's song about Tia. He means to try them for treason."
Maris continued to hold Barry tightly. "There, there," she said. "Shh, Barry."
"There was a riot in Port Theos," said the boy from Thossi. "When they came to the Moonfish Inn to take Lanya, the singer, the landsguard met with customers who tried to defend her. They beat the defenders off with clubs. No one was killed."
Maris listened numbly, trying to absorb it, trying to think.
"I'll fly to Val," Srella said. "I'll spread the word among the black flyers. They'll all come. The landsman will have to release Col."
"No," said Maris. She still hugged Barry, and the child's sobbing had ceased.
"No. Col is a landbound, a singer. He has no claim upon the flyers. They would not rally together to defend him."
"But he's your brother."
"That makes no difference."
"We have to do something," Srella insisted.
"We will. We had hoped to provoke the landsman, but to make him strike at the flyers, not the landbound. But now that it has happened, Col and I discussed this possibility."
She raised Barry's face gently with a finger beneath her chin and wiped away her tears. "Barry, you have to go away now."
"No, I want my father. I won't leave without him."
"Barry, listen to me. You must leave before the landsman catches you. Your father wouldn't want that."
"I don't care,"
Barry said stubbornly.
"I don't care if the landsman catches me. I want to be with my father."
"Don't you want to fly?" Maris asked.
"To fly?"
Barry's face suddenly lit up with wonder.
"Srella here will let you fly with her over the ocean," Maris said, "if you're big enough not to be afraid."
She looked up at Srella. "You can take her, can't you?"
Srella nodded. "She's light enough. Val has people on Trinel. It'll be an easy flight."
"Are you big enough?" Maris asked. "Or would you be afraid?"
"I'm not scared," Barry said fiercely, her pride wounded. "My father used to fly, you know."
"I know," Maris said, smiling. She remembered Col's terror of flight and hoped that Barry hadn't inherited that particular trait.
"And you'll save my father?" Barry asked.
"Yes," Maris said.
"And after I take her to Trinel?" Srella said. "What then?"
"Then," said Maris, standing and taking Barry by the hand, "I want you to fly to the keep with a message for the landsman. Tell him that it was all my doing, that I put Col and the other singers up to it. If he wants me, and he will, tell him I will turn myself over to him, just as soon as he releases Col and the others."
"Maris," warned Evan, "he will hang you."
"Perhaps," said Maris. "That's a chance I have to take."
"He agrees," Srella reported on her return. "As a sign of his good faith, he has released all the singers, except Col. They were taken away by boat to Trinel, with orders never to return to Theos. I witnessed their departure myself."
"And Col?"
"I was allowed to speak to him. He seemed unharmed, although he was worried that something might have happened to his guitar. They wouldn't let him keep it. The landsman has said he will hold call for 3 days. If you do not appear at his keep by then, call will hang.
Then I must go at once, Maris said.
Swella caught her hand. Call told me to warn you away. He said you were not to come under any circumstances, that it was too dangerous for you.
Maris shrugged.
Dangerous for him as well.
Of course I will go.
It may be a trap, Evan said. The landsman is not to be trusted. He may mean to hang you both.
That's a risk I'll have to take.
If I don't go, Carl is sure to hang. I can't have that on my conscience. I got him into this.
I don't like it, Evan said.
Maris sighed. The landsman will have me sooner or later, unless I flee Theos at once. By giving myself up to him, I have the chance to save Cole, and perhaps to do more.
What more can you do? Swella demanded. He'll hang you, and probably your brother too, and that will be that.
If he hangs me, said Maris calmly, we will have our incident. My death would unite the Flyers as nothing else could.
The colour drained out of Srella's face.
Maris, no, she whispered.
I thought that might be it, said Evan in a voice that was unnaturally calm.
So this was the unspoken twist in all your plans. You decided to live just long enough to be a martyr.
Maris frowned.
I was afraid to tell you, Evan. I thought this might happen. I had to consider it when I made my plans.
Are you angry?
Angry?
No.
Disappointed.
Hurt.
And very sad.
I believed you when you told me you'd decided to live. You seemed happier and stronger, and I thought that you did love me, and that I could help you.
He sighed.
I didn't realize that instead of life you'd simply chosen what you thought would be a nobler death.
I can't deny you what you want. Death and I wrestle daily, and I've never found him noble. But perhaps I look too closely.
You will have what you want. And after you are gone, the singers will make it all sound very beautiful, no doubt.
I don't want to die, she said very quietly. She went to Evan and took him by the shoulders.
Look at me and listen to me, she said.
His blue eyes met hers, and she saw the sorrow in them and hated herself for putting it there.
My love, you must believe me, she said.
I go to the landsman's keep because it is all I can do. I must try to save my brother and myself, and convince the landsman that flyers are not to be trifled with. My plan is to push the landsman until he breaks and does something foolish. I admit that, and I know that this is a dangerous game. I have known that I might die, or that one of my friends might die, but this is not an elaborate plan to make a noble death for myself.
Evan, I want to live, and I love you. Please, don't doubt that.
She drew a deep breath. I need your faith in me. I've needed your help and your love all along. I know the landsman may kill me, but I have to go there, risk that, in order to live. It's the only way. I have to do this for Cole and for Barry, for Tia, for the Flyers, and for myself. Because I have to know, really know, that I'm still good for something. That I was left alive for some purpose. Do you understand?
Evan looked at her, searching her face.
Finally he nodded. Yes, I understand. I believe you. Maris turned.
Srella?
There were tears in the other woman's eyes, but she was smiling tremulously.
I'm afraid for you, Maris. But you're right. You have to go. And I pray you'll succeed, for your own sake and for all of us. I don't want us to win if it means your death.
One more thing, said Evan.
Yes?
I'm going with you.
They both wore black.
They'd been on the road less than 10 minutes when they encountered one of Evan's friends, a little girl rushing breathlessly up the road from Thossey to warn them that a half-dozen Landsguard were on their way. They met the Landsguard a half-hour later. They were a weary group, armed with spiked clubs and bows and dressed in soiled uniforms stained with the sweat of their long, forced march. But they treated Maris and Evan almost deferentially and did not seem in the least surprised to meet them on the road. "We are to escort you back to the Landsman's Keep," said the young woman in charge. "Fine," said Maris. She set them a brisk pace. An hour before they entered the Landsman's isolated valley, Maris finally saw the black flyers for the first time. From a distance they seemed like so many insects, dark specks creeping across the sky, although they moved with a sensuous slowness no insect could ever match. They were never out of sight from the first moment Maris noticed motion low on the horizon. No sooner would one vanish behind a tree or a rocky outcrop than another would appear where the first had been. On and on they came, a never-ending procession, and Maris knew that the aerial column trailed miles behind to Port Theos and extended on ahead to the Landsman's Keep and the sea, before curving around in a great circle to meet itself above the waves. "Look," she said to Evan, pointing. He looked and smiled at her, and they held hands. Somehow the mere sight of the flyers made Maris feel better, gave her strength and reassurance. As she walked on, the moving specks in the afternoon sky took on shape and form, growing until she could see the silver sheen of sunlight on their wings and the way they banked and tacked to find the right wind. Where the road from Thossey joined the broad thoroughfare up from Port Theos, the flyers passed directly overhead, and for the rest of the journey the walkers moved beneath them. Maris could make out the flyers quite well by then. A few kept high, up where the wind was stronger, but most skimmed along barely above treetop level, and the silver of their wings and the black of their clothing were equally conspicuous. Every few moments another flyer caught and passed Maris and Evan and their escort, so the shadow of wings washed over them as regularly as silent breakers crashing against a beach. The Landsguard never looked up at the flyers, Maris noticed. In fact, the procession in the sky seemed to make them surly and irritable, and at least one of the party, a whey-faced youth with pockmarks, trembled visibly whenever the shadows swept over him. Near sunset, the road climbed over the last hills to the first checkpoint. Their escort marched through without stopping. A few yards beyond, the path dropped off abruptly, and there was a high vantage point from which the entire valley was visible beneath them. Maris drew in her breath sharply and felt Evan's hand tighten in her own. In the shimmering red haze of sunset, colours faded and vanished, while shadows etched themselves starkly on the valley floor. Beneath them the world seemed drenched in blood, and the keep, hunched like some great crippled animal made of shadow, impossibly black. The fires within it sent up heat ripples that made the dark stone itself seem to writhe and tremble, so it looked like a beast shivering in terror. Above it, waiting, were the flyers. The valley was full of them. Maris counted 10 before losing track. Heat beating against stone sent up great updrafts, and the flyers soared on them, climbing halfway up the sky before spinning free to descend in wide, graceful spirals. Around and around they moved, circling, waiting, dark scavenger kites impatient for the shadow beast to die. It was a somber, silent scene. "No wonder he is so afraid," Maris said.
"We're not supposed to stop," the young officer leading their escort said to them.
With a final glance, Maris proceeded down into the valley, where Tia's silent mourners flew ominous circles above the shadowed fortress, and the Landsman of Theos waited inside his cold stone halls, afraid of open sky.
"I have a mind to hang the three of you," the Landsman said.
He was seated on the wooden throne in his receiving chamber, fingering a heavy bronze knife that lay across his knees. Against a white silk shirt, his silver chain of office gleamed softly in the light of the oil lamps. But his face was at odds with his clothing, pale and drawn and twitching. The room was full of Landsguard. They stood along the walls, silent, impassive. There were no windows in the chamber. Perhaps that was why the landsman had chosen it. Outside, the black flyers would be wheeling against the scattered evening stars. "Coll goes free," Maris said, trying to keep the tension from her voice. The landsman frowned and gestured with his knife. "Bring up the singer," he ordered. A Landsguard officer hurried off. "Your brother has caused me great trouble," the landsman continued. "His songs are treason. I see no reason to release him."
"We have an agreement," Maris said quickly. "I came. Now you must give Coll his freedom."
The landsman's mouth twitched. "Do not presume to tell me what to do. By what conceit do you imagine that you can dictate terms to me? There can be no bargaining between us. I am landsman here. I am Theos. You and your brother are my prisoners."
"Srella carried your promise to me," Maris replied. "She will know if you break it, and soon flyers and landsmen will know all over Windhaven. Your pledge will be worthless. How will you rule then, or bargain?"
His eyes narrowed. "Oh, perhaps so," he smiled. "I made no promise to release him whole, however. How well will your brother sing of Tia, I wonder, when I have had his tongue yanked from his mouth and the fingers of his right hand cut off?"
A wave of vertigo washed over Maris suddenly, as if she stood on the edge of a great precipice, wingless and about to fall. Then she felt Evan take her hand again, and when his fingers twined within her own, somehow she found the threat she needed. "You wouldn't dare," she said. "Even your Landsguard might balk at such an atrocity, and flyers would carry word of your crime as far as the wind would take them. All your knives could not long protect you then."
"I intend to let your brother go," the landsman said loudly, "not because I fear his friends and your empty threats, but because I am merciful. But neither he nor any other singer will ever sing of Tia again on my island. He will be sent from Theos never to return."
"And us?"
The landsman smiled and ran his thumb along the blade of the bronze knife. "The healer is nothing, less than nothing. He can go as well."
He leant forward on his throne and pointed the knife at Maris.
"As to you, wingless flyer, I will even extend my mercy to you. You too shall go free."
"You have a price," Maris said with certainty.
"I want the black flyers out of my sky," the landsman said.
"No," said Maris.
"No!"
He shrieked the word, and his hand plunged the point of the knife into the arm of his chair.
"Where do you think you are? I've had enough of your arrogance. How dare you refuse? I'll have you hanging at first light if I so choose."
"You won't hang us," Maris said. His mouth trembled.
"Oh," he said. "Go on, then. Tell me what I will and will not do. I'm anxious to hear."
His voice was thick with barely suppressed rage. "You might like to hang us," Maris said, "but you don't dare. Because of the black flyers you are so anxious to have us remove."
"I dared hang one flyer," he said. "I can hang others. Your black flyers do not frighten me."
"No? Why is it then that you do not go outside your halls these days, even to hunt or walk in your own courtyard?"
"Flyers are pledged not to carry weapons," the landsman said. "What harm can they do? Let them float up there forever."
"For ages no flyer has carried a blade into the sky," Maris agreed, choosing her words carefully. "It is flyer law, tradition. But it was flyer law to stay out of land-bound politics as well, to deliver all messages without a second thought as to what they meant. Tia did what she did, nonetheless, and you killed her for it, in spite of centuries of tradition that said no landsman might judge a flyer. She was a traitor,
the landsman said. Traitors deserve no other fate, whether they wear wings or not.
Maris shrugged. My point, she said, is only that traditions are poor protection in these troubled days. You think yourself safe because flyers carry no weapons? She stared at him coldly. Well, every flyer who brings you a message will wear black, and some of them will carry the grief in their hearts as well. As you hear them out, you will always wonder, will this be the one? Will this be a new Tia, a new Maris, a new Val Onewing? Will the ancient tradition end here and now, in blood?
It will never happen, the landsman said, too shrilly.
It's unthinkable, Maris said, as unthinkable as what you did to Tia.
Hang me, and it will happen all the sooner. I hang who I please. My guards protect me.
Can they stop an arrow loosed from above? Will you bar all your windows? Refuse to see flyers?
You are threatening me, the landsman said in sudden fury.
I am warning you, Maris said. Perhaps no harm will come to you at all, but you'll never be sure. The black flyers will see to that. For the rest of your life they will follow you, haunting you as sure as Tia's ghost. Whenever you look up at the stars, you will see wings. Whenever a shadow brushes you, you will wonder. You'll never be able to look out of a window or walk in the sun. The flyers will circle your keep forever, like flies around a corpse. You will see them on your deathbed. Your own home will be your prison. And even there you will never really be certain. Flyers can pass any wall, and once they've slipped off their wings, they look like anyone else.
The landsman sat very still as Maris spoke, and she watched him carefully, hoping she was pushing him the right way. There was a wildness about his puffy eyes, an unpredictability that terrified her. Her voice was calm, but her brow was beaded by sweat, and her hands felt damp and clammy. The landsman's eyes flicked back and forth, as if hunting for escape from the spectre of the black flyers, until they settled on one of his guards.
"Bring me my flyer," he snapped. "At once! At once!"
The man must have been waiting just outside the chamber. He entered at once. Maris recognized him, a thin, balding, stoop-shouldered flyer she had never really known. "Sarn," she said aloud when his name came to her. He did not acknowledge her greeting.
"My landsman," he said deferentially in a reedy voice.
"She threatens me," the landsman said angrily. "Black flyers," she says. "They will hound me to my death," she says.
"She lies," Sarn said quickly, and with a start Maris remembered who he was. Sarn of Theos, flyer-born, conservative. Sarn, who 2 years ago had lost his wings to an upstart one-wing. Now he had them back by virtue of her death.
"The black flyers are no threat. They're nothing, nothing."
"She says they will never leave me," the landsman said.
"Wrong," said Sarn in his thin, ingratiating voice. "You have nothing to fear. They will soon be gone. They have duties, landsmen of their own, lives to live, families, messages to fly. They cannot stay indefinitely."
"Others will take their place," Maris said. "Windhaven has many flyers. You will never be out from under the shadow of their wings."
"Pay her no mind, sir," Sarn said. "The flyers are not behind her. Only a few one-wings, trash of the sky. When they leave, no one will take their place. You need only wait, my landsmen."
Something in his tone, beyond his words, shocked and sickened her. And all at once Maris knew why. Sarn spoke as a lesser to a superior, not as equal to equal. He feared the landsman, and was beholden to him for his very wings, and his voice made it clear that he knew it. For the first time, a flyer had become his landsman's creature, through and through. The landsman turned to face her again, his eyes cold.
"As I thought," he said. "Tia lied to me, and I found her out. Val Onewing tried to frighten me with empty threats, and now you. All of you are liars. But I am cleverer than you think me. Your black flyers will do nothing. Nothing. Onewings, all of you. The real flyers, they care nothing for Tia. The council proved that."
"Yes,"
San agreed, head nodding. For an instant, Maris was consumed by rage. She wanted to storm across the chamber and seize the frail flyer, shake him until he hurt. But Evan squeezed her hand hard, and when she glanced at him, he shook his head. "San," she said gently. Reluctantly, he turned his eyes to meet hers. He was shaking, she saw, perhaps in shame at what he had become. As she looked at him, Maris thought she saw a bit of all the flyers she had ever known. "The things we will do to fly," she thought. "San," she said. "Jem has joined the black flyers. He is no one-wing." "No," San admitted, "but he knew Tia well." "If you advise your landsman," she said, "tell him who Dorrel of Laos is." San hesitated. "Who?" the landsman snapped, eyes flicking from Maris to San. "Well?"
"Dorrel of Laos," San said reluctantly. A western flyer, my landsman. He's from a very old family, a good flyer. He's about my age."
"What of him? What do I care?" The landsman was impatient. "San," said Maris, "what do you think would happen if Dorrel joined the black flyers?"
"No,"
San said quickly. "He's no one-wing. He wouldn't."
"If he did?" "He's popular. A leader. There would be others."
Clearly San did not like what he was saying. "Dorrel of Laos is bringing 100 western flyers to join the circle," Maris said forcefully. An exaggeration, probably, but they had no way of knowing. The landsman's mouth twitched. "Is this true?" he demanded of his pet flyer. San coughed nervously.
"Dorrel, it's hard to say, sir. He's influential, but...
"Silence," the landsman said, "or I'll find someone else for those wings of yours." "Ignore him," Maris said sharply. "San, a landsman has no right to bestow or take away wings. The flyers have united to prove the truth of that."
"Tia died wearing these wings," San said. "He gave them to me."
"The wings are yours. No one blames you," Maris said. "But your landsman should not have done as he did. If you care, if you agree that Tia's death was wrong, join us. Do you have any black clothing?"
"Black? Well, yes."
"Are you mad?" the landsman said. He pointed at San with his knife. "Seize that fool!" Hesitantly, two of the landsguards started forward. "Stay away from me," San said loudly. "I'm a flyer, damn you." And they stopped, looking back at the landsman. He pointed again, his mouth twitching. He seemed to be having difficulty finding words.
You will take San and..."
He never finished. The doors to the chamber burst open then, and Col was dragged bodily into the room by a brace of guards. They shoved him forward toward the landsman. He stumbled to his hands and knees, then rose unsteadily. The right side of his face was a massive purplish bruise, and his eyes were as black as his clothing.
"Col!"
Maris said, horrified. Col managed a feeble smile.
"My fault, big sister. But I'm all right."
Evan went to him and examined his face.
"I did not order this," the landsman said.
"You said he shouldn't sing," a landsguard replied. "He wouldn't stop singing."
"He's all right," Evan said. "The bruise will heal."
Maris sighed in relief. Despite all their talk of death, it had been a shock to see Cole's face.
"I'm tired of this," she said to the landsman. "Listen, if you want to hear my terms."
"Terms?"
His tone was incredulous. "I am landsman of Theos, and you are nothing, no one. You cannot give me terms."
"I can and will. You'd do well to listen. If you don't, you won't be the only one to suffer. I don't think you realize the position you and Theos are in. All over this island your people are singing Cole's song, and the singers are moving from island to island, spreading it through the world. Soon everyone will know how you had Tia killed. She was a liar, a traitor."
"A flyer is not a subject and cannot be a traitor," Maris said.
"And she lied to stop a senseless war. Oh, she'll always be controversial,
but you'd be a fool to underestimate the power of the singers. You're becoming a widely hated man.
Silence!
The landsman said. Your people have never loved you, Maris continued. They're frightened too. The black flyers scare them. Singers are being arrested. Flyers are hanged. Trade has been suspended. The war you've started turned sour. Even your landsguard are deserting. And you are the cause of it all. Sooner or later they will think of getting rid of you. Already they know that nothing else will cause the black flyers to leave. The stories are everywhere, Maris went on. Theos is cursed. Theos is unlucky. Tia haunts the keep. The landsman is mad. You will be shunned, like the first mad landsman, like Kennehut. But your people will only endure it for a short time. They know the solution. They will rise against you. The singers will light the spark. The black flyers will fan the flames. You will be consumed. The landsman smiled a sly, frightening smile. No, he said, I will kill you all and have an end to it. She smiled back at him. Evan is a healer who has given his life to Theos, and hundreds owe him their very lives. Coll is among the greatest singers of Windhaven, known and loved on 100 islands. And I am Maris of Lesser Amberley, the girl in the songs, the one who changed the world. I'm a hero to people who have never met me. You'll kill the three of us? Fine. The black flyers will watch and spread the news. The singers will make the songs. How long do you think you will rule then? The next flyers' council will not be divided. Theos will become like Kennehut, a dead land.
Liar! The landsman said. He fingered his knife. We mean no harm to your people, Maris said.
Tia is dead, and nothing will bring her back. But you will accept my terms, or everything I've warned you of will happen. First you will give over Tia's body so she can be flown out to sea and cast from a height as flyers are always buried. Second, you will make peace as she wished. You will renounce all claim to the mine that started your war with Thrain. Third, you will send a poor child to Airholm Academy every year to train for wings. Tia would like that, I think. And finally, Maris paused briefly, watching the storm behind his eyes, and plunged on regardless. You will renounce your office and retire, and your family will be taken from Theos to some island where you are not known and can live out your days in peace. The landsman was running his thumb along the edge of the knife. He'd cut himself, but he did not seem to notice. A tiny drop of blood spotted the white silk of his fine shirt. His mouth twitched. In the sudden stillness that followed her words, Maris felt faint and tired. She had done all she could. She had said all that she could say. She waited. Evan's arm went around her, and in the corner of her eye she saw Coll's bruised lips twist into a slight smile. And abruptly Maris felt almost good again. Whatever happened, she had done her best. She felt as if she had just returned from a long, long flight. Her limbs ached and trembled, and she was damp and chilled through to the bone, but she remembered the sky and the lift of her wings, and that was enough. She was satisfied.
"Terms," the landsman said. His tone was poisonous. He rose from his throne, the blood-smeared knife in his hand. "I will give you terms," he said. He pointed the knife at Evan. "Take the old man and cut off his hands," he ordered. "Then cast him out and let him heal himself. That ought to be a sight to see."
He laughed, and his hand moved sideways, so the knife was pointing at Coll.
"The singer loses one hand and a tongue."
The knife shifted again. "As to you," he said, when the blade pointed at Maris,
"since you like the color black, I will give you your fill of it. I will put you in a cell without a window or a light, where it is black day and night, and you will stay there until you have forgotten what sunlight was. Do you like those terms, Flyer? Do you?"
Maris felt the tears in her eyes, but she would not let them fall. "I'm sorry for your people," she said softly. They did nothing to deserve you.
Take them, the landsman said, and do as I've ordered.
The landsguard looked at each other. One took a hesitant step forward and stopped when he saw he was alone.
What are you waiting for? The landsman shrieked. Seize them!
Sir, said a tall, dignified woman in the uniform of a high officer, I beg you to reconsider. We cannot maim a singer or imprison Maris of Lesser Amberley. It would be the end of us. The flyers would destroy us all.
The landsman stared at her, then pointed with his knife. You are under arrest as well, traitor. You will have the cell next to hers if you like her so well. To the other landsguard, he said, take them.
No one moved.
Traitors, he muttered. I'm surrounded by traitors. You will all die, all of you. His eyes found Maris. And you will be the first. I will do it myself.
Maris was achingly aware of the knife in his hand, the dull bronze length of it, the smear of blood along the blade. She felt Evan tense beside her. The landsman smiled and walked toward them.
Stop him, said the tall woman he had tried to arrest.
Her voice was weary but firm. At once the landsman was surrounded. A burly bear of a man held his arms, and a slim young woman took the knife from his grasp as easily and fluidly as if she'd pulled it from a sheath.
I'm sorry, said the woman who had taken charge. Let me go, he demanded. I am landsman here.
No, she answered. No.
Sir, I fear you are very sick.
The grim, ancient keep had never seen such festivity. The grey walls were decked with bright banners and coloured lanterns, and smells of food and wine, wood smoke and fireworks permeated the air. The gates had been opened wide to all. Landsguards still roamed the keep, but few were in uniform, and weapons were forgotten. The gibbets had been torn down, the scaffolding altered to make a stage where jugglers, magicians, clowns and singers performed for the passing crowd. Within, doors were open and halls filled with merrymakers. Prisoners from the dungeons had been set free, and even the lowest riff-raff from the alleys of Port Theos had been admitted to the party. In the great hall, tables had been set up and covered with huge wheels of cheese. Baskets of bread and smoked, pickled and fried fish of all kinds. The hearths still smelled of roasting pig and sea-cat, and puddles of beer and wine glistened on the flagstones. Music and laughter were in the air. It was a celebration of a richness and size unknown on Theos in living memory. And among the crowds of the people of Theos moved figures dressed in black. Not, by their faces, mourners. The flyers. These flyers, one wing and flyer-born alike, along with the previously exiled singers, were the guests of honour, fated and toasted by all. Maris wandered through the boisterous crowds, ready to cringe at any more recognition. The party had gone on too long. She was tired and feeling a little sick from too much food and drink, all tributes forced on her by admirers. She wanted only to find Evan and go home. Someone spoke her name, and reluctantly Maris turned. She saw the new landsman of Theos dressed in a long embroidered gown that did not suit her. She looked uncomfortable out of uniform. Maris summoned a smile. Yes, landsman? The former landsguard officer grimaced.
I suppose I will get used to that title, but it still brings to mind someone very different. I haven't seen much of you today. Could I have a few minutes with you?
Yes, of course, as many as you wish.
You saved my life.
That wasn't so noble. Your actions took more courage than mine, and they weren't self-serving. The story they will tell about me is that I carefully plotted and planned to depose the landsman and take his job. That is not the truth, but what do singers care for truth? Her voice was bitter. Maris looked at her in surprise. They walked together through rooms filled with gamblers, drunks, and lovers, until they found an empty chamber where they could sit and talk together. Because the landsman still was silent, Maris said, "Surely no one misses the old landsman. I don't think he was well loved." The new landsman frowned. "No, he will not be missed, and neither will I when I am gone. But he was a good leader for many years until he became too frightened and began to think foolishly. I was sorry to have to do what I did, but I saw no other choice. This party here is my attempt to make the transition joyful instead of fearful, to go into debt to make my people feel prosperous." "I think they appreciate the gesture," Maris said. "Everyone seems very happy." "Yes, now, but their memories are short." The landsman moved slightly in her seat, as if to shake off the thought. The line between her eyes smoothed out, and her features took on a kindlier cast. "I didn't mean to bore you with my personal worries. I drew you aside to tell you how respected you are in Theos, and to tell you that I honor your attempts to keep peace between the Flyers and the people of Theos." Maris wondered if she was blushing. "Please," she said, "don't. I had the Flyers in mind and not the people of Theos, to be honest." "That doesn't matter. What you accomplished is what matters. You risked your life for it." "I did what I could," Maris said, "but I didn't achieve very much, after all. A truce, a temporary peace. The real problem, the conflicts between the Flyer-born and the One-Wings, and between the landsmen and the Flyers who work with them, is still there, and it will flare up again." She broke off, realizing that the landsman didn't care and didn't want to know that this happy ending was no true ending at all. "There will be no more trouble for the Flyers on Theos," the landsman said. Maris realized that the woman had the useful ability to make a simple sentence sound like a proclamation of law. "We respect Flyers here, and singers too." "A wise choice," Maris said. She grinned. "It never hurts to have the singers on your side." The landsman went on as if she'd not been interrupted. "And you, Maris, will always be welcome on Theos, if ever you choose to return to visit us." "Visit?" Maris frowned, puzzled. "I realize that since you no longer fly, the journey by ship may be... What are you talking about?" The landsman looked annoyed at all the interruptions. "I know that you are leaving Theos for Seatooth soon, to make your home at the Woodwings Academy. Who told you that?" "The singer, Carl, I believe. Was it a secret?" "Not a secret, not a fact, either." Maris sighed. "I was offered the job at Woodwings, but I've not accepted it." "If you stay on Theos, of course we would all be pleased, and the hospitality of this... my keep will always be extended to you." The landsman rose, obviously concluding her formal recognition of Maris, and Maris too stood, and they spoke a few moments longer of inconsequential things. Maris hardly paid attention. Her thoughts were in turmoil again about a subject she had determined was resolved. Did Col think he could make something come true by speaking of it as fact? She would have to talk to him. But when she found him a few minutes later in the outer courtyard near the gate, he was not alone. Barry was with him, and Swella. And Swella was carrying her wings. Maris hurried to join them. "Swella, you're not leaving." Swella grasped her hands. "I must. The landsman wants a message flown to Deeth. I offered to take it. I have to get home, and I would have to fly south in another day or two anyway. There was no need for Jem or San to go so far, when I can take it just as well. I just sent Evan to look for you, to tell you I was leaving. But it needn't be a sad farewell, you know. We'll see each other soon at Woodwings." Maris glared at Col, but he looked oblivious. She said to Swella, "I told you I would live out my life on Theos." Swella looked puzzled. "But surely you've changed your mind? After all that has happened? And you know they still want you at Woodwings, now more than ever. You've become a hero all over again." Maris scowled. "I wish everyone would stop saying that. Why am I a hero? What have I done? Just patch things over for a bit longer. Nothing has been settled.
You at least should realize that, Suella.
Suella shook her head impatiently. Don't change the subject. What about that fine speech you gave us about needing a purpose in life? How can you turn your back now on the work you're meant to do? You've admitted you're no good as a healer. What will you do on Theos? What will you do with your life?
Maris had asked herself that same question, and had lain awake most of the night arguing it with herself. Now she said quietly, I will find something I can do here. The landsman may have something for me.
But that's such a waste, Maris. You're needed at Woodwinds. You belong there. Even without your wings, you're a flyer. You always were and you always will be. I thought you recognized that. There were tears in Srella's eyes. Maris felt resentful and trapped. She didn't want to be having this argument. She said, trying to keep her voice level and calm, I belong with Evan. I can't leave him.
And they say eavesdroppers never hear good of themselves.
Maris turned to see Evan, and there was such tenderness in his eyes that she forgot her lingering doubts. She had made the right decision. She couldn't leave him.
But no one is asking you to leave me, you know, he said. I've just been talking with a young healer who is eager to move into my house and take over my patients. I can be ready to leave within a week.
Maris stared at him. Leave? Leave your house? But why?
He smiled. To go with you to Seatooth.
It may not be a pleasant voyage, but at least we can comfort each other in our sickness. But I don't understand. Evan, you can't mean it. This is your home.
I mean to go with you wherever you go, he said. I can't ask you to stay on Theos just to keep you beside me. I can't be that selfish knowing you are needed at Woodwings and that you belong there.
But how can you leave? How will you live? You've never been away from Theos.
He laughed, but it sounded forced. You make it sound as if I proposed to go live in the sea. I can leave Theos like anyone else, on a ship. My life hasn't ended yet. And until it has, there's no reason why I shouldn't change. Surely an old healer can find some work to do on Seatooth.
Evan.
He put his arms around her. I know. Believe me, I've thought this through. Surely you didn't think I was sleeping last night while you were tossing and turning and wondering what to do. I decided that I can't let you walk out of my life. For once in my life, I must be bold and dare something different. I'm going with you.
Maris couldn't hold the tears back then, although she couldn't have said just why she was crying. Evan pulled her close and held her tightly until she recovered. As they drew apart, Maris could hear Col assuring Barry that her aunt was happy, that she was crying with joy, and she saw Srella standing a little apart, her face alight with joy and affection.
I give up, Maris said. Her voice was somewhat shaky. She wiped her face with her hands. I have no more excuses. I will go to Seatooth. We will go to Seatooth. As soon as we can get a ship out.
What began as a few friends walking with Srella to the Flyer's Cliff became a procession, an extension of the celebration within the keep. Maris, Evan, and Col were the popular heroes, and many wanted to be close to them, to see at first hand what was so special about the flyer, the healer, and the singer, who had deposed a tyrannical landsman, stopped a war, and ended the eerie threat posed by the silent black flyers. If anyone still dared think Tia had done wrong and deserved her fate, it was thought silently, privately, held as an unpopular opinion. And yet even in this happy, admiring crowd, Maris knew, the old resentments were still buried. She had not banished them forever, neither those between landbound and flyer, nor the conflict separating the One Wings and the Flyer-born. Sooner or later this battle would have to be fought again. The journey through the mountain tunnel was not a lonely one this time. Voices echoed loudly off stone walls, and a dozen torches blazed and smoked, making the damp, dark corridor a different place. They emerged to a dark, windy night,
the stars obscured by clouds. Maris saw Sweller standing near the cliff's edge, talking with another flyer, a one-wing still wearing black. At the sight of Sweller standing on that too familiar cliff, Maris felt her stomach clench and her head reel with dizziness. But for Evan's support, she felt she would have fallen. She knew she didn't want to see Sweller leap from the cliff from which she had fallen, not once but twice. She was suddenly afraid. Several youths darted forward now, loudly vying for the privilege of helping Sweller ready herself for flight. Sweller half-turned, seeking Maris, and their eyes met. Maris drew a deep breath, steadying herself, trying to empty herself of fear, released Evan's hand and stepped forward. "Let me help," she said. She knew it so well. The texture of the cloth of metal, the heft of the wings in her hands, the firm snap of struts locking into place. Even though she could no longer wear the wings herself, still her hands loved this task they knew so well, and there was a pleasure, even if rimmed about by sadness, in preparing Sweller for flight. When the wings were fully extended, the final struts snapped into place, Maris felt the return of her fear. It was irrational, she knew, and she could say nothing of it to Sweller. But she felt that if Sweller stepped off that dangerous cliff, it would be to fall, just as Maris had done. Finally, forcing herself, Maris managed to say, "Go well." Her voice was very low. Sweller looked at her searchingly. "Ah, Maris," she said, "you won't be sorry. You've made the right choice. I'll see you soon." Then, despairing of words, Sweller leant forward and kissed her friend. "Go well," Sweller said, one flyer to another, and then she turned toward the cliff edge, toward the sea and the open sky, and leapt into the wind. There was applause from the onlookers as Sweller caught a rising current and wheeled above the cliff, wings glinting darkly. Then, rising higher and heading out to sea, she was lost to sight almost at once, seeming to merge into the night sky. Maris continued to gaze into the sky long after Sweller had vanished. Her heart was full, but there was a steadfast certainty there, as well as pain, and even a small spark of the old joy. She would survive. Even without her wings, she was a flyer still.